we're back. Hi guys, it's Claire here. So Flammable Penguins, the podcast, is a relaunch of the Game Programmers and Training podcast. We have broadened the scope to include all areas of development, and I'm going to randomly pull some of my co-workers into a booth to discuss topics. To suggest a topic to discuss, just go to flammablepenguins.com, and under podcast you'll see suggest a topic. Suggest a topic, vote on other topics, and I'll respond. We'll grab some of my fellow artists, programmers, designers, anyone from the office, and we'll find some interesting things to say for it for about half an hour, and then we'll fire it up here. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Also, the site's been relaunched to kind of give a cleaner split between my work, my hobby stuff, and just my stuff. So it's all there, and I apologize for the poor quality of the laptop mic. The actual proper podcast, which you're about to hear, is actually in the studio audio booth. And I also apologize for some heavy breathing in the background. I've tried to filter it out, but it was really, really hot in there, and I think either Neil or me was breathing into the mic. Anyway, onwards and upwards. See you in a bit.
Hi all, the Flammable Penguins podcast has once again resumed, and I have managed to grab some of my co-workers in to talk about cross-platform development, because I know they disagree in parts, and when they disagree, it's fun. So it's me, Claire, here, and with me I have Tim Kelsey and I have Neil Richardson. Tim mostly does our networking side, but is heavily involved in the engine, and then Neil is just generally our engine slash tech monkey and gets beaten a lot.
And Beatpark is good.
Yes. So we've never actually done a simultaneous SKU release before. That SKU being a platform of some sort. But at Mere Mortals and other companies we've worked at, and also in personal projects, we have approached the problem of different platforms many, many times. And it's something that hobbyist programmers and people who are not familiar with this kind of studio production environment usually have very little experience in and do a poor job of. So I was just wondering if we could dive into that. Between us, we've pretty much covered all the pretty much every platform from DS to PS3 to iPhone to
PS2, PSP, PS3, Xbox 360, Samsung Butter, iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, DS, DSi. And I have done a little bit of GBA as well in a hobbyist project.
Yes, GBA as well.
Not all at once.
Not forgetting PC.
Of course, PC, which we often kick and neglect in the corner because definitely. Who knows what the PC is. So I suppose the opening and easiest question to go with, and I'll start with you here, Tim, is what is the favorite platform to use as a consumer for you, and then what is the favorite platform to develop for?
Well, as a consumer, my platforms are limited to the PC and to the Xbox, which is mostly my primary gaming platform. I have a DS portable, but I don't use it as much as I thought I might. That's just me not getting on with portable gaming, though not necessarily anything to do with the platform itself. Development-wise, though, the PS3 is my primary development platform, alongside PC. Quite a difference there between the Xbox and the PS3 in terms of what I use and what I write for, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's nice to have a separation between leisure and work. But consoles certainly offer a nicer target than PCs when you're looking at cross-platform considerations, because a platform like a console is controlled and fixed. It's not trying to hit a moving target like a PC is. However, with that also comes the problems of radically different architectures at the very hardware level. Most PCs will work in a vaguely similar way, but consoles will have dramatic differences, particularly between looking at different form factors, a handheld versus a regular games console, or these new things like the touchscreen things, the iPad and that, which are on the horizon. All these things give different challenges, and trying to work with a system that's fundamentally different and yet share considerable quantity of code base between the two is a challenge. It's something that you
it
need
is very to much it's why we're here. And so Neil, your favorite to consume and to develop for?
Consume, probably 360, Xbox 360. Absolutely fantastic gaming console, really. Disagree because of the fact that it red rings, but favorite to develop for? Honestly, I really enjoyed developing on the Wii. It might sound really weird me saying that. I mean, you both heard me scream and shout when developing for the Wii sometimes, but because it doesn't support things like shaders, it forces you to think a little bit harder when coming up with effects. The iPhone hasn't been too bad to me, other than having to deal with some Objective-C.
I mean, I think as a studio, we've excelled most probably the highest on our Wii titles, technically speaking, because we've spent so much time developing for the Wii, and because we've had projects which have really demanded a lot from the Wii. One example that we can use, for instance, is XSR, where we took that PS...
SXR.
XSR. The acronyms, where we took a PS3 title, which was a bit choppy, and we made it into a very, very smooth Wii title, and you both worked on that conversion there.
Yeah. Most of mine was focusing on trying to make the snow in the game actually look good.
Yeah. So, wildly different there. My personal opinion is, as a consumer, I'm tossed up between the PC and the Xbox, mostly because the PC has a very wide range of independent games that constantly draw my attention, though the Xbox is a smoother experience. To develop for, by far, the 360 is my favorite to develop for, because the tools are just so, so wonderful, and Pix is my baby.
So there's a lot of Xbox love in the room right now.
Yes. So, the first issue, really, the biggest issue now, especially with the introduction of Natal and PlayStation Move, and which we're now having to incorporate into our work engine, is controllers. What is your personal approach between how much you should try unify a controlled system and how much you should just give up on it? Because, for instance, the Wii and the PlayStation Move are similar but different.
Well, as with many, many problems faced when you're approaching multi-platform development, the fundamental key is abstraction. You can't tailor your system directly to the facilities of your input device without excluding any other input device. So really, this is something that's quite important, is to abstract what your fundamental logic and your fundamental engine perceives as its input and your actual device that's generating that input, an abstraction layer between those. Something like an event system where button presses, motion controller movements and similar gestures and things can be abstracted. I mean, we do it in speech. We might say, I've pressed a button, or we might collect a bunch of movements together and term them a gesture. So doing that in the code base allows you to treat these things in an abstract way. You have a button press, you have a gesture, you have a movement, but these things are abstract ideas that don't necessarily have to be tied into what the controller really did. You can term these things and transmit these things in a generic fashion to the innards of your system, whatever that might be. And thus, you know, this allows you to abstract things. So even on a platform which you may not have seen before, let's say we take a touchscreen platform, you can abstract a touch to a button press, a swipe to a gesture, just as you might do with a wand motion or with a controller pad press. They all become the same thing. So fundamentally, at the technology level, you can do this by simply thinking about and boiling down controls to their lowest common denominator.
But now, the event system is wonderful, but it has a lot of overhead, and especially with touch, multi-touch systems and gesture systems, there are some complications, and I think Neil has come across some of these.
Well, personally, I'd probably go with Tim and say going with events for input is a really nice way to do it. But if you have a game loop, as it were, just your main loop, which your game logic's executed in, polling is incredibly logical.
Yeah,
it's a lot more overhead, but it can be a simpler to work with the multi-touch presses.
Yeah.
When first starting, IDs might change all of a sudden, depending on what hardware you're working on and how the driver layer actually deals with that.
Well, that's true. Your polling gives you a more, well, less better system in terms of latency. You don't have to worry about communications and all that jazz. You're going straight to the metal and you're getting the information that you need. But of course, then you risk having to re-implement your polling system with each different controller scheme that comes around. Do you have anything to get around that?
Well, the way we work at the moment is we have a base controller class which has a set of abstractions, which is key down, key up, key press, key release, key value. And those cover most input values. Then we have more specific things such as accessors for the accelerometers, accessors for touch positions, accessors for cursor positions. So it's quite a beefy interface class. But what this allows is someone to just look without having to worry about, oh, what ID is this touch? There's less confusion there.
I see. So again, it comes down to a question of abstraction. You've mentioned key up, key down, this, that, and the other. But those are, again, abstract extrapolations of
control up, control down.
Yes, yeah. But again, it's an abstraction. It's an interface that provides you a general kind of way of looking at what is potentially different input schemes from different devices. And of course, let's not forget that we're not just talking cross-platform here. There are, let's take the PS3, you could have a conventional pad, you could have a six-axis, you could have a wand, you could have a series of different input devices, even on the same platform. So this problem isn't just multi-platform in nature. This is multi-control scheme on a single platform, and the same rules apply.
I mean, we can't speak about it, but that is actually a problem you're dealing with at this very moment.
It is, yes.
So it's a wonderful term that we use, SKU, rather than platform, because SKU tends to refer to a specific hardware setup. For instance, the PlayStation 2 had multiple SKUs. Even though we weren't allowed to differentiate between them in our code, they did actually exist. So it's interesting because, you know, as someone who approaches it from a game side, I'm more a user than a maker for this technology. And especially when I'm working on the design side, you're almost always want to get those polling things and those dirty things which break the abstraction.
Now, you see, since one of our other programmers has started to take over our previous tech lead, he's been going through our engine and looking, going, I don't like this, I don't like that. It's too difficult to do platform-specific things, which are crucial if you want to actually get the most out of a platform. You need to, you potentially at a game level need to go and implement a special effect completely platform specific without the abstraction layer. Now, abstraction makes it incredibly easy to port a game. I mean, you can remember when I got SXR running on the 360.
Yes.
In a couple of days. That was after our engine was a year out of date.
Yes, now I remember it quite well. Because the thing is, now moving on away from the controller, the most common thing and the thing that you've already reference to is renderers, because you look at the Wii, you look at the iPhone, you look at the PS3, you look at all these different platforms and they have vastly different renderers. And it should be mentioned that not only do you have the generic things you want to be displayed on screen, but you have special effects, you have shaders, you have materials, you have your 2D pipeline, your 3D pipeline, these various things. And I know here that you two differ slightly on how you like to deal with how much code should be shared and how much code should be separated between platforms. So what's your opinions with that? Should we start with Tim again there?
Yep. Okay. Well, this isn't quite what we do here, but my own personal preference for this sort of thing is to share as minimal amount of code as you possibly can. This effectively is, if you've got two different platforms, when we're talking about something as fundamentally different as a rendering pipeline, my inclination would be to implement two separate renderers. So rather than trying to share an abstract and put in place layers of padding between the systems trying to use the renderer and the renderer itself in order to make the renderer appear identical, because, of course, this is a render we're talking about here. We need performance, and putting in layers of abstractions costs you performance. And it seems to my mind a better idea to just implement a fresh rendering pipeline for each of your platforms, and put aside the engineering principles of sharing code and not reinventing things, because we're saying 90% of the code here is going to be different anyway. So we may as well just go down the whole hog and have separate renderers. These things can be pluggable, and you can put them behind an API, an informal API that's not...
So you're talking about a common abstract interface that is not necessarily inherited from, but is used as a base for...
Yeah, it's not formalized. You wouldn't have an abstract class and virtual function calls and all that. But you would agree on an API where you would provide function calls of similar ID, so that you could just basically drop this thing in and compile it. And maybe, you know, you'd have stub calls which don't actually do anything in a given renderer, but for the most part you try and map up what you can do with the hardware to an API, but without any real formalized attempt to share things. And it means that things tend to be cleaner. And if you're working predominantly on a project which only has SKUs on a limited subset of platforms and not other platforms, this limits the danger of breaking the platforms that you're not actively working on in the process of developing for your other SKUs. I think this produces a cleaner way of approaching something, but only really suitable to systems where most of your code is going to be very different anyway, such as a renderer where you're restricted to the hardware platform.
So, for instance, looking at, say, the 360 compared to the PC, the renderer on those two, assuming you're using DirectX, is relatively similar.
Yes.
In which case, then you would use the same code base.
Yes.
But for something like the 360 and the Wii,
yes,
you would differentiate.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, okay. You see, I would disagree on that one. I would actually go down the route of have the renderers for every platform be as close as you can possibly get them. They queue up the render nodes the same way. They sort them in the same way. They execute them in the same way. What this means is there's not going to be... When you're trying to release a project across multiple platforms, for example, if we were to release a game on 360, PS3 and Wii, three totally different platforms with the things which make them... Well, things they're better at than each other. If you try to deal with three completely separate renderers, you end up polluting your game and framework code with ifdef PS3, ifdef 360, ifdef Wii. Well, this can cost quite a lot of time.
That's very true. I mean, that is always the problem. But then by implementing a system with a similar outward-facing interface, you wouldn't necessarily have to have any ifdefs in there, because the functions that you're going to call are the same. Ultimately, a function submit render node is going to look exactly the same in all of your render implementations, and you would simply call it. And you wouldn't need to worry about ifdefing or excluding code in any special way. You'd simply have these functions and you'd call them and off you'd go. Just because you've implemented your renderers as independent, separate, non-shared lumps of code doesn't mean to say that they won't appear to be as uniform as possible. There will be a few special cases and flaky bits around the edges, but if you don't want to put ifdefs in there, put stub code in, functions that exist but don't do anything. For example, you call them, nothing happens. They're there just to satisfy the interface so that you don't have to worry about it with compiler errors and ifdefing and things. And your compiler is going to optimize these functions anyway, because they don't do anything. The chances are the compiler is just going to rip them out and remove the function call anyway. So you're not harming your performance by doing this either.
I'm not mentioning the names of these engines, but I believe there's two commercial engines which have basically good commercial engines which have basically a hardware abstraction layer which acts as an interface to the hardware.
Yes.
It pretty much mirrors the calls that you would get from OpenGL or DirectX.
It should be mentioned that most modern studio engines, unlike a lot of hobbyist or independent engines, are actually not one global entity but are layered. And a common abstraction is to abstract the hardware and then to have something just above that and then to have a framework layer. It is worth mentioning at this point.
But, yeah, that's a good point.
Sorry, go on.
But yeah, basically it would be, instead of you going add viewport, add object to viewport, it would be the calls viewport, draw, index primitive, and it would just wrap those up, expose exactly the same API to your next layer above that. That would be shared across all platforms. Maybe, for optimization purposes, duplicate it, create one for the PS3, which would then go off and count of all the jobs on the SPUs instead of running on the PPU.
Okay, well, I mean, the PS3 is a radically different platform that's been brought up. For example, let's bring something up that I think we have actually dealt with technically in the past that I think is possibly, I would be interested to hear how your system deals with it or how the work system deals with it, because I wasn't on that project. But the Wii does not support render targets.
No,
not directly. So in terms of that kind of difficult technical problem, because the way you have to approach it is completely from a different angle. I mean, we can't go into specifics, but it is a completely different approach. So how do you abstract something like that without having a huge overhead?
We basically have an array of which we iterate through for the maximum number of render targets we support.
Okay.
If there's any object being drawn, copy the screen to a texture and store that off as our render target. Do them in reverse order so that your last screen to be rendered is your final screen output.
And you think that the abstraction we have there is optimal enough for the different platforms?
I believe it is.
Okay. Well, I mean, the other thing is how much, the other question that's constantly going to come up with the separate implementations is the cost of porting, as Neil has already pointed out.
Well, yes.
It's not uncommon for a studio to be working on simultaneous SKUs. We tend not to because we're a smaller studio and we tend to have more than one type of project on the go at a time. But it does come up. And if you've got a games team, say, releasing for, let's take the PS3 and the Wii again, how much extra development time do you feel the game team would be exposed to?
If it's done right, very little. I mean, there's always a risk when you've got systems that are different at a basic level, that certain things are going to work well, certain things are not going to work well. And obviously, an engine is a facilitating mechanism for your game team. Realistically, the engine need adapt to the whims of the game team and not the game team having to work with the engine. But in a perfect world, that might happen. In reality, it's a bit of give and take. So, yeah, there may be a little bit of extra time involved for your game team if you don't implement these things quite as you would like. They don't quite gel at the surface level. This interface isn't quite what you'd want it to be. And obviously, there's going to be difficulties in how you communicate your intentions to the rendering functionality. These things can be dealt with, and over time, you're likely to find this problem lessens as you settle on a more stable API for what you're actually trying to do. But obviously, initially, at first, you're going to have quite a few feature requests, and you're going to need to go back and do some more work and put more stuff out there to keep the game team happy with what they, you know, can achieve what they need to do. And ultimately, that's the whole point of the engine. If you can't do that, then technically it may be great, but it's not really a lot of use.
Okay, well, let's take a programmatic effect that we're currently using. I won't refer to the effect explicitly, but in a game that I'm currently developing it's targeting one SKU, but obviously we're working on the PC as well, which works differently. I've had to implement a platform-specific version of this programmatic effect. And there's a good chance that because the target platform, I could say the target platform is the iPhone, because you have the lower-end iPhone, which doesn't have shaders, and the higher-end, which does, there's a real chance I'm going to have to implement this again twice. And it's a very, very specific effect. Do you think either of your solutions would have dealt with this, or do you think it's just this sort of special case you have to grin and bear?
Pretty much have to grin and bear it. If you want something to look good and run optimally, you've got to implement it specifically for the platform. There are cases where you're going to have separate bits of code. For example, on the PS3, it won't be running on the CPU. It would be a separate program, a separate application running on a SPU to perform a particular effect. Basically, with my system, as you've known from developing it, you would go through a render node, and that would be plugged into the renderer instead of having hard-coded specific things that the renderer can only do. We support being able to write platform-specific code as we wish.
Yeah. Well, I have to say I agree with what you've just said. If you want things to run and look optimally and look good, you need to implement them with the specifics of the platform in mind. And that's the whole principle of writing multiple implementations to try and target those strengths and then mitigating the fallout from switching between implementations by attempting to make them as familiar at the interface level as possible. To a degree, you can achieve the same effect with either solution. They'll both do what you want, and they both have advantages and disadvantages. But ultimately, you are going to have to face some platform-specific details that you just can't work around, and you do have to implement multiple times. Realistically, though, in that position, what you can do is to try and implement these things away from the game code and away from specific things where you can bottle them up, and later on in a project down the line, you can bring them back out again.
Library of platform-specific things, which we actually have for SXR as well.
Yes, and that's the sort of thing that can accompany a render implementation. You will have your core, which is the facilities that you know you can expect, and then an additional platform of, an additional selection of platform specific implementations for specific effects that you can roll out, and you know the fire and water stuff, you know the eye candy that everyone loves to see, and you can bring these things out and make them look and perform the best that they can on your target, and at the cost of having to switch between a different set of libraries and expecting certain differences when you are working on multiple SKUs and just having to deal with that. But you wouldn't necessarily have to re-implement anything once you've already got it in your library. You simply have to be aware that this works this way and that works that way. And it's a bit more effort for your game team, but not something that's insurmountable when you gauge it against the performance and visual, talking about renderers here, and visual advantages of doing it this way. Really being able to levy the full power and the full capabilities of the platform without being restricted to the lowest common denominator from a selection of platforms, which could be, if you've got handhelds and things in there, pretty low.
Well, now, let's move on from the renderer, because I think we've covered pretty well. But previously, before Tim joined us, Neil did some network code for some of our games.
Oh, God.
And ported across different platforms. And Tim has worked on a variety of projects, even some MMO projects, MMO-scoped projects. So it's a thing. And also because there is the chance that multiple SKUs will actually be interacting with networking at runtime, what are your beliefs for the implementation of network and communication layers? Do you support the same, I'm going to start with you, Tim, because I know how the work one goes, but do you support the same sort of platform-specific separation as you do with the renderer?
With networking, most APIs at the low level revolve around socket concepts, and you can work with these things in a very similar way. They all look very similar, with the exception of your handhelds and the Wii, which does things in a
special way.
In a very special way, yes. But ultimately, we're talking about sockets at the end of the day. So the underlying API that you're dealing with is very straightforward and not really subject to much change for switching on platforms. Obviously, this is not the kind of API you want to expose to your game programmers.
What about
programmers.
More service-level stuff like leaderboards, matchmaking?
Yes, your matchmaking stuff when you're talking at the higher level rather than just raw communication. Now, that is something that ultimately is going to be very platform and very service-specific. New platforms released by the same manufacturer in the future may well share quite a quantity of code because there'll be a back-end infrastructure supporting this API, which is an expensive thing to change, even when you're talking about rolling out a new platform. These things will need to be implemented, to my mind, as separate systems. But there is scope for a degree of shared code here in the fundamental communication layer. Once you've boiled past the matchmaking and you've actually got into your game, you can switch to shared stuff here. But the matchmaking stuff really falls under the same situation as the renderer. We're talking different APIs here. We're talking different facilities available to us, not on the platform locally, but on the API, the service backend that Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo or whoever are providing for you.
But there's a lot of similarities in function, like leaderboards and such. So, Neil, moving on to you, what is your opinion with the service level?
Well, you can remember when I first implemented the networking system here, it was pulled from my home engine just to get us up and going before... Well,
that was
before
for dance.
No, oh, that was... I don't even want to remember the networking for that. Oh, okay, I'll start with that. Well, I still treat networking the same way as I did then. While Tim's got the right point, it pretty much always relies on sockets. But I tend to sit a layer above sockets and sit at a service level. I prefer to entrust a third-party library, or on certain platforms we work on, they might provide a system which would give us all the functionality we require, such as reliable communication, ordered communication.
Yeah, there's basically a lot of session layer stuff, especially when you plug in voice communication, for instance, which you have to load balance with your traffic. And if you go to a sockets level, you have to be a lot more conscious.
Well, you do, but you also get the ability to do that. If you're mixing and matching APIs, let's say you're talking about your own internal communications mechanism running alongside somebody else's voice API, let's say, as you've mentioned, then the voice API could very well be a black box for you, and you don't really know much about how it's going to communicate and how it's going to do its thing. And so it's very difficult for you to tune and tailor your other communication facets into something that where the system, it has to be a synergy. It has to share the same bandwidth ultimately across all the components that want to talk. And so you have to try and tailor things so that they all play nice together. Not a problem if you're using a complete integrated API, a backend provided by a third party, as Neil said, but not all backends necessarily provide all of the services that you want to do, and you may well want to roll your own stuff in there. And then that can be quite tricky when you've got to balance these things out.
Noticing this at the minute with a project outside of work, I have to write a matchmaking server. Whilst RackNet will pretty much provide me everything I need, I still have to write a significant amount of code to do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that the matchmaking, for instance, the heuristic may be affected by the game, and the game team may want to get into it.
Beep. I'm going to find a beep sound to put in here when NDA stuff is broken and I have to cut a bit out of the podcast. I apologise. In future, there will be a beep, or maybe a Tinkerbell sound. I'm not quite sure.
Many engines use their framework to abstract these sort of these things. I encourage people to look at the Blitz engine. They are actually licensing it now for external developers to use. Okay, well, before we, I mean, we pretty much covered the networking, the controls, and the renderer, which are, to be honest, the biggest things. You get other niggles like storage, user-specific things, TCR requirements, you know, per platform, but those are slightly higher level in this discussion. So moving on, I would like to, on the topic of platforms, just ask Neil first, what would you like to see, what platform has you the most excited on the horizon, and what would you like to most see in platform development?
Well, oddly enough, it's actually the iPad. I'm not impressed with it as a piece of hardware personally. As an actual simple
form factor.
As an actual form factor, it's brilliant. As hardware, as the OS on it, I'm not particularly a big fan of it. I'm not going to go too much into the detail, but I like the form factor of having a multi-touch handheld device whereby you can interact with it easily. Now, personally, I see this as incredibly useful to musicians.
Okay, so that's the platform, or that's the form factor that has you excited, not necessarily the
factor,
iPad
yes.
itself, but possibly other implementations of that form factor. Tim, what platform has you the most excited?
Well, in new platforms, I have to agree with the iPad as being,
the
tablet PC form factor as being very interesting. It's designed as an application, as an appliance, as an on-demand thing you can just pick up and use. And that idea gels very nicely with the idea of casual gameplay, something you can just pick up, play, put down, much like the iPad and these similar tablet platforms are intended to be. But as well as this, I'm also quite interested to see how development on a PS3 is going to progress with more understanding and more correct and clever utilization of the SPUs, which gives you a lot of power to supplement your rendering with post processes and things. And we've seen some really amazing looking stuff coming out of this as a result. This is moving. Yes, definitely.
Brilliant example.
So you, God do you of War feel 3 that we're still just scratching the surface of the SPU?
I do. I really think that there's a lot of potential that can be gleaned from the SPU yet. And this is just something that we're going to see as the platform, the PS3, continues and as more titles and things come out. We're going to see cleverer and more interesting and extreme effects implemented on the SPUs. And this is interesting because it's graphical stuff that's moving away from the GPU, that's moving into a more general kind of area for programming, and something where you can start to roll these things into other systems more synergistically. Maybe you might want to tie these things into some audio input or other controller input even, or anything. You can do these things a bit more easy when you've got less of a separation like you have with your GPU-CPU standard architecture. Your SPUs sit somewhere in between, and you can levy these very powerful devices to do all sorts of interesting things.
Cool. Well, I'm a bit geeky, and because I'm not going to go into... because I'm not a techie person, I have to say the platform that's exciting me the most at the moment is the Chrome Web Store, and the concept that web applications are now actually becoming fully blown applications, and that games are becoming more and more viable using non-proprietary
HTML5.
Yes. So that is what excites me moving forward. And that will wrap us up for this week. If you look in the show notes and on the website, we'll be having a link there to Google Moderator. If you just throw some suggestions of things you'd like to hear in the podcast for us to discuss, doesn't necessarily need to be code. It could be art-wise, could be design, could be QA, could be programming. Throw us some stuff on there, and then when we have a few good suggestions on there, I'll try pull in a few work colleagues, and we'll get another one of these up. So thanks again for your time, Tim, Neil.
Thank you.
And let's get back to hammering our games onto various different forms.